Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Hey, in today's episode, I get to talk to Wendy. I get to talk to Wendy all the time. And I'm really excited about sharing these kitchen table conversations with you. And we're moving, so this is one of the last opportunities we'll have to do a kitchen table conversation at this kitchen. Micah's coming in. You can hear her clicking there. Micah, sit. Sit. Good girl. Now that she's settled down, we can get around to talking. We're going to be talking about some of what's going to be happening in our retreat in France this summer. So I'm very much looking forward to that. You can still get in on the early bird special for that retreat. Check out peterfurco.com/France2018 for all the details. And I think without further ado, I'm going to make myself a cappuccino and go sit down and talk with Wendy. Enjoy. Namaste, Wendy.
Namaste.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We're in a big transition.
Yes.
We're doing our kitchen conversation, and we may be leaving this kitchen.
That's true, but we will have a kitchen.
We'll have a kitchen.
Wherever we go.
So we'll continue to have kitchen convos.
Yes.
As they say these days.
Front seat of the car convos or...
yeah.
Diner convos.
Yeah. We'll have convos somewhere where we can set up the portable recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which makes a good segue into the topic of the day, which is taking your yoga off your mat mm-hmm. and into your life.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're going to focus a lot on when we go off to France this summer, how to live creatively, how yoga informs a creative life, how you can find creative ways to live that bring you more toward santosha, more toward purpose, toward what Alan loves to say, fulfilling your karma, working through your karma gracefully.
Exactly. Not finishing it up and getting it right and somehow magically drinking a magic bullet or thinking that 1 hour, three times a week on the mat will somehow fix it and do everything that you wish you could have done.
Or leave you in ducks and geese land.
Leave you in ducks and geese land, or conversely just make you realize life follows you wherever you go.
Right. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah.
Because it's your karma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I've been thinking about, and I wonder what your response is to this, but in thinking about our retreat this summer in France and thinking about the creative process of living and how living yogically shifts that, I've been thinking a lot about how it's even funny to think about taking yoga off the mat, because but how did it get on the mat in the first place?
Right.
Right? So for me, like,
it's
I just did this
misnomer.
Yeah, I did this reframing where I, you know, I don't believe that yoga exists on the mat in any actual way, that yoga is rather a way we live life.
Yeah.
And
it has a component that's on the mat.
Yeah, it's got one component that's on the mat. And even we've just sort of deified that part.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
That's kind of my reframing.
Yeah, I had a really nice response from a student. I'm teaching this new class in Midtown at Floating Lotus on Saturdays. And a student came who hadn't been there before. And it's interesting when you teach at a new place, because it's like bringing what you always do to some new people. And they may or may not have had that before. So this one woman came up afterwards and said, you know, that was really beautiful. So often in class, it's all about the physical, and yet you did this whole thing that was about here, and she pointed to her head, and here, and she crossed her hands over her heart. And I said, thank you, but I wouldn't know what yoga was without that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So I feel like it's our role as teachers to help people learn that.
Exactly.
And because they don't know what yoga is.
And they don't. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with one of our dog park friends in Park Slope back in that day.
Yeah.
And she was somebody who was always talking about going on this retreat to Bolivia and that retreat to the Virgin Islands and her favorite yoga class that she went to with her girlfriend. And so, I mean, she had been practicing seriously, what sounded to me like serious yoga, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I just said something about the eight limbs, blah, blah, blah. We were walking our dogs out of the park, eight limbs. And she looked at me and said, what do you mean? What's that? And I said, oh. And I said, well, it's the part of yoga that's not, you know, it's the rest of yoga, not just the asana part of yoga. And she said, there's another part?
Right.
And I thought, what kinds of retreats is she going on?
Yeah.
And I realized that it's very, that's sort of the way that people conceive of yoga in this day and age. And I forget because I'm so immersed along with you and our yoga, our Ishta people.
Yeah.
But it's not that way in the rest of the world. So the more, I think, the more that we can do to just keep on educating at that level.
Yeah.
And even just introducing,
yeah,
you know, that stuff. But then also, you know, just kind of creating some sort of modeling for it being also off the mat.
Right. Well, like, you know, on the flip side of that, Roque said in our conversation last week that when he was struggling at home, you know, as a young person and in a challenging household and whatnot, doing this physical practice was so calming for him. And I think a lot of people come to yoga and get that and feel like, oh my gosh, this is so great. That's what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet then they go off into the world of their job and their relationships and their looking for quote-unquote happiness or whatever, and they don't realize that there's this whole other part of yoga,
mm-hmm,
that is available,
yeah,
to help with that part too.
I agree, and I want to seem like not an Eeyore here, but I do want to poke a little bit of a hole in that thought process, that the people who come to yoga in a yoga studio for like a vinyasa class are already a sampling of the population who likes to move in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's a really good entry point. But there are a lot of people in the world who don't have that.
Right.
And for them, there may be other entry points that don't have to do with starting with asana.
Yeah.
And I just want to broaden. I'm in a place where I want to broaden that out. Because
yeah,
to me, you know, all of the limbs together make up yoga. And whether we start out in meditation and get to asana, or whether we start out in asana and get to meditation, the point really is that it's all connected at those different levels that your student indicated.
Yeah.
Right?
And even more than just those two limbs that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, just by way of anecdote, it was interesting because in the TT, teacher training, you know, you talk about doing private sessions. And of course, that's a great way to deal, mm-hmm, one-on-one with someone and deal exactly with what they need. And my mentor in my training, Gene Kerner, said, oh, well, a private, you know, I mean, when I go for a private with my teacher, Al, we just sit and talk. And so I never thought of a private as being like a yoga practice.
Right.
And yet not that many people get to hear that sentence, you know,
yes.
and know that, oh, wait, you talk? What do you talk
right.
about?
What's the
well,
point
Well, you
of
talk
that?
About life. Yeah. You talk about what's challenging for you. You talk about how do I address these things? And then you use the toolbox of yoga as a way of dealing with it. Talking, working with energy, working with oils, working with asana, working with diet, all those things.
Right. And I would like to shift people's point of view to recognize that talking with people can have many more layers and components, right? Because what we're doing when we're speaking with people is we're not out of our bodies.
Right.
We're still in our bodies. We're still in our emotions. We're in our minds. And if we're doing yoga and meditating, we're also in our, like whatever you want to call it, our higher mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is when you're speaking with somebody doing yoga, you're not just speaking to them like, hey, how you doing? I'm Wendy. You know, I'm like some person off the street.
Sharing
facts you're going into your yoga.
Right.
And you're opening up the field for them,
yeah.
and that's yoga too.
There's an energetic
right? It's not just
exchange.
Talking about your practice. There's an energetic exchange. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Shakti,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I hadn't been hanging out with Al very much this winter because I've been mostly home. And when we went there the other day, he was like, oh, Wenz, it's good for you to, you have to come just hang out more,
mm-hmm.
right? Be in the Shakti, reconnect with the Shakti.
Right.
You know, that's a very simple way of doing yoga.
It's the classical way.
It is.
And that's the other thing that most people these days are unaware of because we're in such an internet culture and we think,
yes.
oh yeah, we can just like
There's
go online and
that.
Read and
exactly.
watch our yoga practice and do it that way. But classically speaking, you sat at the feet of your guru.
Yeah.
And that's how you found contentment in life. That's
yeah.
how you found the answers. That's how you could see what it was that brings you to an understanding of your purpose and
yeah.
how to go through life.
Yeah, and then they would send you home to do something.
Yeah.
You know, that was uncovered in that moment
yeah.
through that exchange. The other part of it that really excites me or, you know, gets my juices flowing is that it's relational.
Yeah.
Right? So when we come into some sort of training situation, whether it be like teacher training or just like a workshop or a class even, I mean, it's harder to do it when people are on the mat in their own space, but there's this way that we can sort of foster this yogic way of relating, which really provides a kind of a yogic experience, right? It provides you with an experience of yourself and other, and of yourself as self and other,
yeah,
and
like,
also that that general observer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that to me facilitates so much yoga learning, you know, self-growth, really.
Mm-hmm.
That,
like understanding that we play all those three roles in relationship.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Sometimes we're the giver, sometimes we're the receiver, and sometimes we're the observer.
And really, like what's happening in yoga is that you're learning to occupy all those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the one we're unconscious about the giving and the receiving
yeah.
most of the time.
Yeah,
that's the pattern.
We usually think the world is just doing stuff to us.
Just I'm just existing, and
it's like beating me. And why is that person being mean
exactly.
to me? Or why don't they recognize how valuable I am and stuff like that?
Yeah, and we project all over the place. But the other part is that really, like I think from time immemorial, the whole thing about yoga is to recognize also the observer, the sattvic pole.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that on the mat in our own like bubble a little bit, but ultimately we kind of have to be doing it out in the real world in order for it to be a full practice. Do you know what
yeah.
I'm saying? Like that, if we're not really you know, that's what taking it off the mat really means to me.
Mm-hmm.
That we're learning to understand that there's this, that life really is a reflection. It's a reflective thing. You know, what's inside here is outside there.
Yeah.
What's macrocosmic is microcosmic.
Right. That's such a hard thing for people to.
It's ridiculously hard.
I just had that little beep happen on my phone and saw some like dramatic world news, and so many people are interacting with the world news as though it's outside of them.
Should I be worried?
No. Rex Tillerson just got fired.
Oh gosh.
But anywho.
Yeah. Refocus.
But sometimes what you can do about something like that, you know, something on the macrocosmic level is very micro. You deal with your micro, and then that's what you can do about the macro.
Yeah, that's about the hardest point to get across educationally,
mm-hmm.
pretty much across the board.
Yeah.
Right? That when we want to change something out there, we have to go and change it in here.
Yeah.
And then it shows up out there.
Right.
And that feels extremely counterintuitive to most people who are raised in our culture, which is very, very young. It's very mm-hmm. externally oriented. It's externally motivated.
Right.
And I think that's just about the hardest thing. I'd say it accounts for at least 50 or 60% of what I do.
Yeah.
Just holding that point.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, you and I and Ulrika, who are going to be doing this retreat in France, are, you know, talking about as we plan the retreat is finding these ways of incorporating that shift in awareness, shift in consciousness about the way things work, and then doing certain things in the retreat that help you then have tools for dealing with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's going to be fun to do for participants, and it's going to be fun for us, you know, to be able to think outside the box of a yoga class or
exactly.
workshop or training. So it's going to definitely have a different feel to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm still mulling it over.
Yeah, we're brainstorming to make it mm-hmm. super good.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasts have become one of my favorite ways to learn about things. I have a handful that I follow that I subscribe to. If you like Peter's podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Peter's podcast just became available on Spotify, so if you listen to Spotify for music, you might also like to listen to me there. And the way that more and more people get to hear the podcast is it shows up highly in ratings. So if you like it also, please rate it. You can do that right on your phone. I have an iPhone, so I know it's like right there underneath the description. There's a place where you just click on a star and you can make a comment. And if you use some other OS, as they say in the tech world, you can check and see how you do it there. You can do it on iTunes, and it just helps other people appreciate what you're appreciating. Thanks a lot. One of the things that Al and I have been talking about the last couple of days is mantra. And especially as it's relating to bringing things back from meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because at Ishta, in our typical meditation classes that Al runs or that I do on Saturdays or that some of the other teachers run, we have this practice of samyama, artavatva samyama, bringing the thing you touch in meditation, bringing it back into living, which in the sutras it talks about creates quote-unquote cities or powers. And mantra was expressed really nicely in this one thing. I was just browsing the internet and I saw this nice description that in Tantra, Tantra is a study of the power of word, the power of the word, which was quite beautiful because we do use mantra like that. I mentioned it to someone else, to Jen Vagios, I think in a recent podcast, that it's a little, sometimes I feel like it's like abracadabra. you know, the way we use the mantra, not that it's like thrown off like a child's story or anything, but it's like the words have power to them. Mm-hmm. So when you utter them with the right intention and having received the Shakti of them, they're powerful, they're potent, you know. But I'd love to hear what you have to say, having worked so much with the sutras, what you have to say about the siddhis, because it's it's an area that's so rife with confusion. People think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that's a very big topic.
That I just dropped on you out of the blue for breakfast.
I can make it simple, I think, or, you know, just kind of simplify a little bit, that in the structure of the four padas, it's kind of like, it's a book about samadhi, right? And so the first pada just says, like, what is samadhi? The second pada says what we do to get there, right?
The practicing.
Not what we do to be a good person, but how we live in order to be, get out of our old program and into our new programming.
So that's my next question. What's sadhana?
Right. So that's sadhana, yeah. Right? How do we do that? So we have this need to do something to have this experience. And once we have this experience, it changes us, right? So samadhi is kind of like this experience that kind of opens up all the floodgates and then shines through source or whatever the experience is that we have in our meditation, which is what the place where you're working in your meditation classes, right? Opening up the gates and being in the experience. And then what the third pada says is when we shine that light back into our system, and it's very specific in some ways and very general in others, right? But that's Artavattva Samyama process, is letting that experience come through us. But the trick is that we can't do it, right? It happens because of the work we did in our sadhana. Now these things just happen. They're more universal, right? So whether it's a change in our orientation towards people, whether it's a change in our orientation towards our body, whether it's getting sensitive to different elements through our senses, right? Maybe having some sort of altered ability to hear things, see things, etc., etc., we doing that shining back is that mantra place, right? Once we're in our meditation, we're beyond our cognitive mind, right? And so we can't use the cognitive mind. That's where all the patterns live. If we use the cognitive mind to come back, we've jumped right over all the juice, right? So the mantra keeps the mind focused on these very particular intentions, right? But it keeps the mind from trying to do the work, right?
Yeah.
So and that's Artavattva Samyama. It's keeping the mind from going into the 10,000 things. It's keeping it in basically like in a dharana state or a dharana dhyana state.
That was the literal definition, that when samadhi and dharana and dhyana, the meditation, or rather concentration and concentration that's effortless,
right,
and the samadhi are all held at you're on the edge of the three things, that's where the samyama happens.
Exactly. And mantra is very, very helpful in that moment, right? And a lot of times, well, so many things to say about that, but it's a really powerful moment, and I think a lot of practices skip over it.
Yeah.
And just say reground and come back and
Or not even.
They just open, you know, you just kinda come back and hope for the best, which is fine too.
It's a way.
You know, it's one way. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. And the siddhis themselves, you know,
And that's SIDDHI.
Yeah.
For those of you who are wondering what city we're talking about.
Which city? New York. Yeah. What Al and I have talked about is that it's highly likely that the ancient yogis knew more about what we're now just getting to in cutting edge science, you know, about the point and the wave, and about, you know, how things shift, how things change and transform. But really, all of the miraculous things that happen when we're out of our habituated patterns, mm-hmm. right? Because the mind really does create that external experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible for it not to. And FYI, by the way, the whole Kaivalya Pada, the whole fourth pada, is about staying in, living from that state of dharana mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At which point you're no longer creating new karma, because you're not personally, individually, cognitively.
Do you mean living through this state of samyama all the time? Or you said dharana?
Yeah, it specifically says living from dharana.
Mm-hmm. Concentration.
But it is talking about once we've had samadhi and when we're on that samyama mm-hmm. side of it, right? Not when we're trying to get to
Because then you
samadhi.
Can always go there for the understanding or the decision point. But if you're not concentrating, then your mind is being distracted into the thousand things. Or however many things there
it
are.
It has to do with, 10, I think, 000. The mastery of sadhana, right? So somebody who's in Kaivalya all the time, yes, exactly, like kind of can just kind of sit on the edge of that pin, yeah. right? Their patterns
the
can
of,
come up.
Sword, I think, or knife. The razor.
On the
razor
point
edge.
Of the pin.
Point of a pin and a
head of
edge
a pin,
of a razor.
Edge of a razor, the yeah. edge of a pin. Well, maybe they sit on
not
the edge
my,
of the
not
pin.
My four-blade razor, but those old-fashioned strip
Straight
razors. Yeah.
You know, you never know
yeah.
what's up there when you get there.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, that's kind of the idea that your patterns can still come up, but you can process them really quickly and just not let them play out.
Because right. you're concentrating. And one of the ways I usually, I often refer to that is like this ruthlessness of how you have to deal with your mind and its
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I admire so much about Byron Katie,
yeah.
that no matter what you say to her,
she's ruthless.
Got four questions for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the first one is that true?
Yeah, yeah. I think at some level, it's basic cognitive behavior. It makes your pattern-holding mind
yeah.
argue with itself.
Yeah.
And finally, it just has to lay down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. And so when it's not doing that, then you get the cities.
Yeah.
Then you start to see things in a bigger way.
Yeah, and one of those places is... in relationship, which a lot of people struggle with,
mm-hmm.
you know, they feel like they got this down, they got that down, things are working pretty well, but then there's some area of challenge. Maybe it's work, maybe it's finances, maybe it's relationship. But when we come to those challenging places, it requires even more of this dharana.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to remember every time something's coming up, it's a pattern or mm-hmm. it's a karma. It's some lesson in there that you have to, as Al always says, work through.
Exactly.
Sometimes I bristle at that language because it makes life sound like it's a job or it's some kind of weird thing that you have to... but it's like working like an actor works on a part, you know,
mm-hmm.
to get it,
yeah.
to figure it out.
Yeah.
But when something keeps coming up, and a lot of times people will say to me, how come this keeps happening to me? How come I keep having this same thing? I feel like I'm in a loop.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are.
That's the nature of living until you can figure it out.
Yeah.
And the figuring it out requires the perspective, the kind of perspective that a sadhana gives you.
Yeah.
And because it's your loop, it can be really hard for you to see it yourself.
Exactly.
And that's where the role of the guru comes in.
And that's why we have sadhana.
Yeah.
Because we have to always remember that as human beings with, you know, we weren't raised by, you know, yogis from the day we were born, we were raised by...
Except for Al's daughter, Satya.
Except for Al's daughter, Satya. And, yeah. And Al had a good head start.
Yeah.
But, you know, we come to it in all sorts of different ways. And that thing about working through your karma, I'm a big fan of that, because the moment that you actually get the clarity on something, even if you've been working on it your whole life, it's always generative. It's always a growth moment, no matter when it comes. And I don't ever want to make people feel that because they're having trouble or struggling with something, that this isn't available to them. This practice is absolutely available
to everybody, right?
No matter what. And the biggest challenge is bring the biggest clarity. And I really stand by that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whatever, that's abhyasa and vairagya right there. You know, you have to get your mind out of the way and not focus on the outcome. And sometimes I even think to myself, you know, all the aspirations and whatnot about my own aspirations about my life. Like, sometimes I'll be in meditation and I'll think, oh, this is what it's about. Like, as long as, even if I just move the needle like a tiny bit, mm-hmm. karmically, mm-hmm. right? Karma is huge. We're right. puny, right. right? And even if I just move it tiny bit, right? I am here to do the thing that I am doing.
Right.
You know? And then, it just falls into place.
Right.
Right? And it's the struggle of the mind that says we've got to get that experience. Well, no, you're having it. You know, you just need to get the struggle out of the way.
Right.
And
right. There's something that might be down the road, like some change of something. You know, if you're in social justice, there will be like improvements down the way and all the outcome of all your work. But in every single moment, what there is what is.
Yeah.
And that's what you have. And the only thing that can change is your relationship to it.
Exactly. Which is right back to yoga is relational.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to demonstrate that. You know, I wish I could get up in front of the class and demonstrate that. Like,
yeah. like, down
like Trikonasana. You know? And that also is really where the guru comes in, because somebody who's had that experience or can sort of stay grounded in that experience
right.
can just kind of hold the fort, you know?
Right.
But really, like, we're all somewhere in struggle, and we got to admit it. And in that place, we have to go to our teacher and we have to go to our practice.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that we're not enlightened, you know, like... It's that paradoxical thing where, you know, we are already enlightened and we also are completely stuck in our patterns.
Yeah.
And I don't see any way around that. I think that's how the world works. That is, to me, duality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yes. And the more you are in your sadhana, the easier it is to remember that dichotomy.
Yes, exactly.
So that when you're in your stuff,
you get out of it
challenging,
much faster.
Yeah, you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Oh right.
Yes. Oh right.
And then you do something about it. You do whatever the practice is.
Mm-hmm.
You recite your mantra. You take a moment to meditate that morning or that evening. Or
as you're always fond of saying, Wendy, change the energy.
Exactly. Right, to remember to shift.
Do your practice.
And that's what
practice.
One can do.
Right? And you know that it's a big struggle / challenge / core pattern when it keeps coming back at you.
Right.
And when you keep having to struggle with it. And when you don't want to do your practice.
And lest when what is it when that thing, the opposite? Lest others think that mm-hmm. this is a one-way conversation. When
right.
I say, Wendy, change the energy, well, your response is always, you change the energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, because life is challenging for everyone.
Yeah. So. Lest one think
yes.
that it's a one-sided conversation.
Yes. Patreon.com is the way I fund Peter's podcast. For now, I'm able to do this. It's a little test, a little experiment to see if I can do it solely on the funding of people like you, people who listen to the podcast, who are interested in the material, and don't like listening to ads for stuff. I just so don't want to do that. So I can only do it if you'll go on patreon.com/peterspodcast and subscribe, become a patron at any level you like. Some of the levels have cool rewards associated with them, including being able to meet with me. I've been talking with people on digital private sessions, and it's a really wonderful way to take some of what we talk about on the podcast and turn it into your own sadhana or your own spiritual practice. So check it out, peterfurco.com or patreon.com/peterspodcast. Here's some more.
So we have to be humble and also accept that we know a lot at the same time, you know? I see, that's where it comes back to me a little bit, to meet people where they are. You know, sometimes people have more resources in one area or the other. And I like to send people back to their resources.
Yeah.
You know? So if that's in the physical body, in the asana, great. But if that's in the, you know, sitting and meditating and reciting mantra, then go there. Or even if it's in, you know, doing the I think the part that's highly underrated is the, like, the sort of psycho-emotional part of yoga, where it, if it's in doing that turnaround, right, sort of a la Byron Katie, which in yoga is called Pratipaksha Bhavanam, learning to live off the mat and doing your practice off the mat.
Yeah, can, like, you give a little teaching about Pratipaksha Bhavanam? What is that?
It's basically changing the energy.
Yeah.
Right? When we get into our you know, on the back of our nexus standing up place, and we say change the energy.
Yeah. Is it described in the Satanapada?
It's described in Satanapada at the just after the yamas and niyamas.
So as part of your practice, there is this this practice, this action that one takes when there's an obstacle, that you
change
turn
the energy.
It around.
You turn it around. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, Byron Katie did not think this up on her own.
Yeah. What?
I mean, she may have intuited it and not read it in the Yoga Sutras, but it is clearly stated there that the way that we work with the yamas and niyamas is, the yamas and niyamas are not about becoming a holier person or a better person or a perfected being, and they certainly are not about perfecting your you know, your ability to be truthful in order to be a good yogi.
Yeah, the yamas and niyamas, for anybody who doesn't know those by name, that's the, like, don't steal, don't cause harm, be more pure.
Yes, and those are old, very, very old-fashioned translations right there, that they are the part of yoga that talks about how to stay in some kind of relationship with samadhi, right? How to live in such a way that one could be doing your life as practice for training to be in samadhi. That's kind of how I think of it.
Yeah.
And so
I see a workshop on the retreat on this.
Yeah. So Pratipaksha Bhavanam is, what do we do when we encounter the obstacles, right? If we're not in ahimsa, right? If we feel we've been violated, or we feel we are violating.
Right.
Right? If we feel that energy, or we notice those thoughts, or we have that impulse, right? Yeah. How do we shift the impulse, right? And we do it by turning it around.
And maybe an example that's common is we're kind of violent to ourselves. We talk at ourselves like we're not good enough, or we're not this, or we're not that.
Right. But I would say, yes, for sure. That's when we notice that we're being, exactly. And the way that we turn it around is by doing a different action or having a different thought, right? So, you know, like when you're really in it, that's the hardest part, right? Because you're like, you change it. You change it. I don't know how to change it.
Right,
you know? But
this always happens to me.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But if you can just do one thing that changes it, right? Like if you get up every morning and you eat a donut, and every morning
you have a stomachache.
You have a stomachache and you just feel shitty and, you know, horrible. Well, then it could be the hardest thing you ever did to get up and just have a glass of water with lemon in it.
Yeah.
First. It could be the hard, it could take you, I don't know how long, to actually do that step. But if you do that step, it changes something.
Right.
That's a physical, you know, kind of an example. But you could also talk about just sort of having an action, or not even an action, but a thought, right? Like, this person is just, I hate this person. They're in my space. How do I get them out? Like, they're always doing this to me. And then you say instead, I'm going to make some space, right? I'm going to just let this person in and create space and see what they really need, right? And that's pratipaksha bhavanam.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen, right? But it is a shift.
Right.
Right? What am I doing that I need to change? Not how do I make them change.
Them change, right.
How do I deal with my own discomfort?
How do I make the circumstances change?
How do I deal with my own discomfort around this relational thing that's happening?
Yeah.
And how does that change it out there?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many personal examples I've had of people changing their behavior around me because I simply didn't take the bait.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a city.
That's a city all on its own, and I'd have to go back through them, but it's probably in there.
Nous allons en France. Où? En France? Vraiment. Oui, nous allons en France. Venez avec nous, en France.
Who is that French guy? Anyway, we're going to France, Ulrika Norbury, Wendy Newton, and myself, in August. You gotta be there. Sign up. PeterFurco.com/France2018 for all the details. Please check it out. We'd love to have you there. Yoga and the art of living creatively. Yeah. Yeah.
So off the mat.
Off the mat.
Way off the mat.
Yoga's way off the mat all the time. You could be a yogi, meaning that you're living in harmony with the aspects of yourself. The practice involves sometimes stopping the regular activity of your mind so that you can have this other perspective. You can start to notice things, see things. And when you see things, it seems miraculous. And some of the things that then transpire seem miraculous.
Yeah.
And
it can be so simple. Like, we think of it as like these gigantic, you know, like, whoa, you know, miraculous things. But it can really be miraculous if you've always, you know, felt like people don't hear you. And then you do your work and then suddenly you get to a place where people are suddenly listening to you.
Right.
Right? And actively hearing you.
Right.
Even in just personal relationships, right? Like, I'm always talking and nobody ever hears me, and like, why aren't they interested and blah, blah, blah. And then you turn it around and you say, oh, like, I'm not listening to people. Maybe I just need to listen to what they're actually saying and stop being so attached to like that they need to hear me. I'm going to turn it around and listen. And then as soon as you start doing that, somebody's saying, well, what do you think?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really big shift.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be miraculous to be miraculous. That's going to change your life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to do. It's not easy to do. Right.
Right. And often people are looking for, well, when is my life going to get easier? And, you know, being in a situation where you feel like, well, I can relate better to anything that occurs is certainly going to make life easier. You know, I mean, it's not the kind of drama, like now everything just flows to me so easily.
Oh, we just want that so much, don't we?
But then anything that comes along, you feel capable.
Exactly.
And that's so powerful.
Yeah, like we're moving in a month and a half and we have no idea where to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
we keep both getting anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have to shift the energy.
Shift the energy.
And we do.
And yeah, I know. And if I think about all the times that that's happened, I could say that this time feels a little different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I think it has to do with, I'm not planning every little detail of all the, I'm just like kind of letting go of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
We're letting go of expectations and we're letting go of all the stuff that kind of trumps us mm-hmm. all the time. Nope. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't even mean to use that word, but,
mm-hmm.
And so it feels kind of like new and possible, even with the anxiety.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah, like the anxiety is still there, but mm-hmm. we're just dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
processing it as it comes up. So I don't know. To me, that is really yoga off the mat. How, like you said it at the beginning, how Al loves seeing slicing through your karma gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we're not seers in the old ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know what's going to come.
Yeah, I love listening. I think it was in the Bible, there's this talk about King David just like literally having chats with God about what should I be doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and getting
mm-hmm.
the answers and getting
yeah.
the advice and whatnot.
It's full of that in the
yeah.
Bible. I love that.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of looking for that. And mm-hmm. it's not the nature of where we are karmically.
Yeah.
You know, and yogis talk about it as being a different yuga, a different age.
Mm.
But we can still have the experience of tapping into that unbound intelligence component of our consciousness and bringing that back into life and following our intuition. So it may not be a giant voice coming from the sky that we're listening to, but we're able to hear if we get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you act. And
I don't know. I hear giant voices from the sky.
Yeah, yeah. But that's because I'm no. screaming at you from upstairs. Can you bring me my phone?
Well, we won't have to deal with that problem anymore.
Yes, we'll probably be on one level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nature of apartments.
We'll just have to whisper. Hey.
Yeah. All right, Wendy. Well, I'm looking forward to more conversations with you and me and Ulrika about the summer. And
yeah.
And it's always wonderful to have a chat with you over the kitchen table.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, namaste.
Namaste.
That's my episode for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's always fun to talk to Wendy. I hope you agree. Leave comments on Simplecast or on Patreon. Sign up on Patreon, become a subscriber, a patron of the podcast. Rate the podcast. Wendy and I are going to Helsinki, Finland to teach a teacher training this summer, which is going to be really a blast. I've already mentioned the France retreat, which I'll mention again. We're doing a France retreat. It's going to be so cool. Come and do it. Also, I've started to make separate bonus episodes of the podcast where I'm reading to you from my novel, Incarnation, which has a yoga theme. So there'll be one following this particular podcast in your feed. Hope you enjoy it. Have a wonderful week. Namaste.